Well, welcome back. Hope you had a quick break, short break. Hope you had a good break.
Be prepared to operate. Here we are. We're ready to begin.
On the fly. Well done, Dave.
That's right. Sharp.
But yes, definitely. So operate's the key area. Now, obviously, we've had a lot of dev-focused discussions that we've been going through for most of today. Now we're taking that step over. How do we start to use the tools that we have, we're using on a day-to-day basis, to provide value back to the business people, as well as the developers, to understand what is actually happening with inside of their application. At the same time, ensure there's one single source of truth from an operations perspective when it comes to support, as well as scaling, as well as security, et cetera, et cetera. So if we switch across to the actual slide decks, and we have a quick look at the flow of where we're going to go and what we're going to discuss from an operations perspective on the operate phase. Cool. Thanks. My blonde moment for today. Okay, so from an agenda perspective, we're going to look at three areas. We're going to look at monitoring, we're going to look at scale, and we're going to look at security. And with each of those, then we're going to have a very similar discussion as we've had for most of today. What are the key concepts around on-premise as well as public and a hybrid scenario? So we'll dig into monitor. We'll understand from an infrastructure perspective, from a changes perspective, problems you might want to preempt, problems when problems occur, what do we do and what tools would we use? And from a scale perspective, how do we cater for increased load? Or an application possibly that is running an exception, that has increased load on the infrastructure it's running. How do we cater for that on premises, as well as from the public cloud perspective with Microsoft Azure? And then good old security. The piece kind of not for any particular reason left to the end, but really how do we take everything we've learned today, the interaction, the engaging with developers, with business, the workflows, the approvals, the understanding, all the integration components, how do we take all of that and apply some policy to that around security? How do I look after my platform, ensuring that it's stable, that I can't get affected by any rogue code, rogue work that might get done? How do I look at identity and access? How do I manage that going forward across private as well as public cloud? And then auditing and logging, to give us quite a few reasons and quite a few things to look at when we start to move back into future versions, future updates, or faster iterations of the actual code that we have out in the environment. So if we look at monitor itself, there's three key areas to kind of focus on. So from a discover perspective, understand what do we actually have out in our environment. So what do we have as far as assets go? When we talk of infrastructure, when we talk of capabilities, we talk of tool sets, and a lot of the chat on the MVA call today has really been around what other tools or names of other tools. So once you as operations understand what do you as a business own, products do you have within your availability, then start to interrogate and use those to find out exactly what are the assets that you own end-to-end in your environment. And now we're starting to move back to those original metrics that we spoke about at the beginning of today, those acronyms we threw out around mean time to repair or recovery. And how do we actually deal with when there is a change? Or how do we actually work with that when a problem is detected? And which tools would we use and how would we actually work with those from a monitoring perspective? If we now move and we just jump back to the slide decks for a second, and we'll have a look. You see, on premises now, focusing purely on monitoring, what do we have at our disposal that we can use to actually give us a view of what is going on in our environments? What do we own? And when we start to experience problems or issues, how do we handle those and actually allow for some sort of workflow, some sort of integration between developers and operations, and possibly business to some extent? So if we look at the three kind of areas, from an options perspective, we can leverage System Center Operations Manager. It's been around for quite a long time. With the release of Service Pack 1 for 2012, we started to give a real view into the actual code. So give us a view, not my app is up or down, or there's a knock-on effect cause my app is down, but give me a view line by line what is actually happening, whether it be performance or whether it be exception. We also then had the integration with IntelliTrace within Team Foundation Server. And we'll have a look at the demonstration and see exactly what view does that give developers into the application from an insight perspective when they start to debug and work on code that might be throwing a few exceptions along the way. When we started the planning section, David and I mentioned around the importance of operations involving themselves with developer and business in the testing phase. Start to monitor in the early stages. So leveraging a tool like the Microsoft Monitoring Agent, start to get a view and provide feedback to the developers to say, you know what, these are the issues that are being picked up. Let them address them at the time, as well as then when it gets to production release, a lot less issues should be experienced along the way, as well as lessons learned by deploying that code out through the different phases while we actually monitor them. From a change configuration options perspective, this kind of gets important in two scenarios. One, as developers are starting to release their apps out and the different versions, different iterations that they might be pushing out to different server components, how do we ensure that the state that they're pushing out to, that platform, is either firstly consistent, but also what happens when that changes? What happens how do we then take the information that's been experienced or that's occurred and have some lessons learned from that from a configuration change perspective? From remediation tools, yes, changes might happen, issues might be occurred, exceptions might happen. How do we take some lessons learned from that and build that back in to ensure that we still enable a dynamic process to try and limit that reoccurring? Again, that brings down those mean time to failures, then brings down the amount of failures, and in the long run starts to improve SLAs, which at the end of the day improves metrics for business, for dev, and for operations. So the first piece that we're going to have a look at from an on-premises perspective now is using the right mouse, is building the story from where we were in the release section, where we went on using the different environments. How do we take that and how do we start to operate the application that is residing in our infrastructure? So if we have a quick look at the slide deck that's here now, we have now moved from the application perspective. We have our various environments with the actual agents that are doing their work, pulling code, making changes. Developers are running through those pieces. Now we want to do an integration between Ops Manager and Team Foundation Server. Very similar to the very first piece this morning where we did an integration between Virtual Machine Manager and TFS. We want to leverage the benefits of having some insight from Ops Manager and the alerts that are provided and handing them back to the developers and creating them as a work item, a task that they can be assigned to a particular developer or a particular team to action. But not just stop there, have a bit of backwards and forwards as well to ensure there is continuous work around the operations and support and remediation of any alerts that might be coming through. So if we just have a look at this graphic, we look at the integration from an Ops Manager TFS perspective. That's really not a whole lot of work involved in doing that. But if we understand on the bottom left-hand side the persona of the developer, the operations person, allowing them to use either the Ops Manager console, which is common for the ops person to understand, and for Visual Studio to be used by the developers to natively have a look at the alerts that are being created as work items in their environment. Now, to get to this step, there's only two key pieces that are really important. One is when the integration is done, Operations Manager needs to have the contribute access in Team Foundation Server. I'm going to take this alert, I'm going to create a work item that can then be assigned and distributed as the development team sees fit. It doesn't have to be assigned and worked with as the operations team sees fit. So again, we're allowing the flexibility back to the operation, to the development team, to assign according to their teams, their structures, in their environment. So what we'll do is we'll jump across now to the demo machine and have a quick look at that slide in detail, really. So I'm going to bring up two pieces. One is firstly the Operations Manager console, which many operations people should understand or have seen of or experienced or know. But ideally, it's a ticketing system that has an alert generating system from performance monitoring, alert monitoring, up, down, fast, slow. What is actually happening out inside of my assets that I actually own in my infrastructure? The only piece that we're going to focus on now for this demonstration is the actual application performance monitoring. Give me a view of what is going on in my application. Is it fast? Is it slow? Is it throwing any exceptions? And when I get that alert, let me pass it across to the development team and let them do some processing on their side. So to start off with the first piece, we're going to have a quick tour of Ops Manager. But basically, we're monitoring that same Fabricam Fiber website that we've kind of used throughout the whole day today. And we're having a view, yes, it's in production now. It's gone through all the phases. It's running. It's live. People are accessing. People are using it. Now we want to keep a view of what is going on in that environment. So we've set up and we've configured Operations Manager to monitor this application. And we've set thresholds for the monitors for certain components. Now, as an operations team, we can easily go and set up those monitors, set thresholds. I think it should be this, I think it should be that. But in reality, in the planning phase, when we sat down with the development team, we sat down with the business analyst, we defined what are the thresholds that you want to have. If it's a performance that you want to monitor, what is too fast, what is too slow? If it's an exception, how many exceptions should come through before we generate an alert? Because if we set those thresholds quite low, we'll either get a ton of alerts, or if we set them too high, we won't get enough alerts coming through, or none at all. So unless we sit down and part of that planning phase, we have the backwards and forwards, we explain to the development team, this is how we can assist you and make it more dynamic to give you insight into your application. But to do that, you need to give us a few answers. Whether you take a screenshot, a snapshot, a list of what you can monitor, and actually sit down in the workshop and work that out, that's down to every operations team and how they handle that. But the takeaway is you need to come to this point with that information and set up the monitoring and configure it accordingly. And if you've done this in the actual development phase, you'd have been able to tweak it because you would have been testing load. You would have been doing real-world tests to a point. And so you'd be able to tweak those thresholds and give developers a real-world view of when this runs in production, what are the key things that we need to monitor and what bar should we set the relevant thresholds for the various components. So at the point now, we've got alerts that are coming in. And in this example, we've got some application exception alerts that are coming in, and we've got some performance exception alerts that are coming in from a couple of evenings ago. So we can see a lot of them are new, some have been assigned, some are awaiting evidence. I'm just going to step through the flow now of how an operations person would deal with this, what's important to them, how do they pass it along. We'll then go across to the development persona, let him use his tools that he knows, and let him receive this on the other side and start to action items from a development perspective. So if we just focus on the exception one first, I made the comment earlier around a single source of truth. If you have a look in the bottom right-hand side here from the alert description piece, this now starts to become the source of truth. Whether the alert sits here in Operations Manager or whether it's created as a work item sitting in Team Foundation Server, this piece of information is consistent. The URL that ties back into the application diagnostics is consistent. There's no more, we think it's this, it should be this, I saw this, this is what I saw. There's one location, there's one knowledge base, and we start to build up a history, in this case of one ticket, of people working with it. Really moving back to that integration of teams working together and bringing down the time to fix and repair issues that we might be experiencing. And I'll call back to that description a little bit later when I go across to Visual Studio. So if we take that exception now, as an operations person, depending on your environment, depending on your structure in your enterprise, you might have a process. Any exceptions come through for Fabricam Fiber, right-click, move that straight away and assign it to engineering. Or you might have one or two lines of support personnel that might go through first before you hand it across to the development. Either way, the process is you have to take this alert and assign it across to the engineering team. As soon as I click on that assign to engineering in the console, like that over there, it refreshes, updates, all that has happened is that the service account that's been assigned, the contribute access permissions in Team Foundation Server, has created a work item on the other side. That now means that this alert sits across in developer land, and they can start to massage and work with who's assigned the responsibility, who will look at it, what severity, etc., etc. So a very simple step here, but we're going to come back to the Ops console in a few minutes. We'll just move across to developer land and have a look at Visual Studio and see exactly what is the experience that they're going to start to get now when that item has come across to their environment. If I just jump back to the home and pretend I'm coming to this for the first time, we focused a little bit earlier this morning around builds and we got a view of how builds and build definition works. I'm now going to focus on work items because those are the tasks that are assigned per team, per developer. It's their action items to create code, fix, repair, etc. I've created a simple query called operational issues because that is what the type that is created when that alert comes across to Team Foundation Server. If I just have a quick look at that query, and we'll see if it's updated for the sixth one that should come through. Great, there, the sixth one's come through while we were having a bit of a chat. So basically, there's that same alert that has come across and been created as a work item within Team Foundation Server. Now, as a developer, I can see this is new. The state is set to new. Nothing has changed. If I go and have a look at the bottom, I have exactly those same components that we saw across in the alert. The same description, the same URL. I can now go and have a look and see exactly the same information the ops support personnel would have had on the other side. So yes, I understand this is an exception. It's the Fabricam Fiber website. It's running in production now. We've released. We do need to support this. So I'll take ownership of this. If I open this one and I go and change the status to accepted, say yes, I acknowledge the incident and I save that work item, I can now start to manipulate and assign based on who I see fit within my developer side of the world. So I might now again have different teams, different personnel that I would assign this to. Now, developers understand this application and the core components that sit within inside of it, and will have the ability and intelligence to assign it accordingly to a particular developer or team, whereas the ops on the other side might not even know who those team people are, let alone where they might be based. If I drill down to the assigned section over here, I get a view of where I can start to work with some of the default accounts, or like a couple of dummy accounts that I have. I've got some Dev Social 1 and Social 2 accounts. I can select one of those, do a save work item. Now, when my user DevSocial01 logs in to his Visual Studio and he goes to his work items, he looks at his operational issues, that'll be assigned to him for him to work on.
Yeah, so to be clear here, right, I mean, this part in Visual Studio is definitely the developer side of the house, right? I mean, you're not going to need to be taking that in that phase of the game, right? It's in Operations Manager, that's where your part plays a role, where, you know, the IT guy would initially do a setup of integrating that Team Foundation server in with Operations Manager and then assigning that bug to a developer. And then after that, you let the developers kind of do their thing and work it out, right? And then, you know, once that's committed, now we're back to that life cycle, right?
100%.
Yeah.
Because at this point now, when it's been assigned to that developer, he can now interrogate, have a look at this, and say, you know what, I need some more information, and pass it back to the ops person on the other side.
Yep.
And that would be that handover backwards and forwards between the pieces of a developer and an operations person. But until this is assigned and saved here, you do not have the ability or the option to send it back to the operations team. So once you've assigned and you've saved that, you can then start to work with this and pass it back to the operations team on the other side. And really, as a matter of awaiting evidence, which wasn't available in the earlier dropdowns until I'd assigned it to a person and saved that work item. So now this closes off that life cycle that David is speaking about now, about saying, right, we've worked with this, we've tested this, but we need some more information. Let the user test it again, run some logs, whatever it may be, but please, operations, go away and do some more work for us, and then give us that input back. And now we get that exchange, that handover between ops and dev to give us a bit more information backwards and forwards.
There are different levels of granularity here, right? I mean, application performance monitoring can get down to that line item of code. Like, for instance, if you're having a performance problem, it can say this line of code is causing this long of delay in a page load time, right? That could be assigned into a ticket just like Morgan has shown you here, to where, you know, it's not a, I think it's this or that. It is a code problem, I know, because it automatically detected it, and I can immediately assign it to that person, right? The other thing, there's other custom levers, I would say, here that you can pull, which is, right, you mentioned there at the very end, oh, well, give me some more information. Well, there's, as we'll see here in a little bit, there's things like IntelliTrace logs, right? Other things that can be automated as part of this process as the IT guy, where you don't need to care about the depths of an IntelliTrace log. You just need to know how to maybe capture it for that dev guy as a part of the exception or the performance problem that's going on in an automated way, ideally, right? To where not only with that bug, you know, maybe it's a line item level of code, or more like the issue like Morgan had, where it's a little more ambiguous, where maybe you provide some additional logging, right? That IntelliTrace log or some other app diagnostic stuff automatically as the process to hand off to the developer, right?
100%.
Yep.
And that kind of closes off that loop around the operations piece.
Yep.
So in the bottom right-hand corner from a console perspective, we can spin back there to kind of close this off. I now have the ability to work with this and say, right, the developer's asked me for some more information. He wants a longer trace. Great, let me do that. Either the developer actions it and he has his user or his tester do it, or it comes back to operations because a ticket has been logged and created, and they allow the person who's logged the call to repeat the actions, and we grab a longer stack of memory that's happened before and after the error has occurred, the exception has occurred, and we pass that back again to the operations person on the other side. So it's a very quick look and feel between the different consoles, but very similar to the demos we showed this morning. It allows operations to focus on exactly that, operations, and allows developers to focus on exactly what they key about, writing code, fixing code, and bringing out fast iterations of the relevant components.
Cool. And I also want to iterate too, like System Center Operations Manager with that Microsoft Monitoring Agent, I mean, that has the ability to be a hybrid scenario, right, where you could, you know, from on-premises monitor your Microsoft Azure application that's up there, right? So I want to make sure that you realize that as an option. But there are some cloud-only options as well. So if for some reason, let's say maybe you don't want to deploy System Center at all, or you don't have it in your environment, you know, we do have a couple options there. Application Insights would be the main the main one, which is you'll see here in a minute in a demo. And then there's also some monitoring capabilities that are available inside of the Azure Management Console itself. As far as change configuration options go, this is where, you know, really you're going to rely upon the tools that are there for traditional VMs today. At least that's kind of how it goes, right? With third-party tools like things like Chef and Puppet, right, or even PowerShell DSC, where you're really checking and enforcing a particular configuration, those are going to be really today relevant for virtual machines, which as they would be right today for on-premises. As far as remediation tools, there are quite a few tools that you have to detect and work and troubleshoot and log things up in the cloud, right? The, you know, I think it takes a little bit of getting used to for operations or traditional on-premises folks that are out there, right? Because it's, you now don't have that physical server to connect up to or necessarily, right? You have some abstraction, of course, in the cloud of the networking and the storage and some of those other things. But with that being said, right, we do have quite a few tools to help you feel more comfortable in that space. And we'll talk about that here in a little bit. So first off, though, right, as far as application insights go, right, what are the choices that you have here? Down at the very bottom, application insights enables you, as well as I would say, you know, System Center Operations Manager, gives you the ability to do really basic availability checks using a technology called Global Service Monitor, or GSM. We'll talk more about that as we do the demo. That really enables you to have a non-invasive mechanism to detect availability of your application, meaning you have to make no code changes at all. And we'll show you that here in a minute. Next up in the list, we see basic performance and application usage. Well, in those cases, right, for performance in our case, you're going to need to install that Microsoft monitoring agent. If you want to know, you know, what's the CPU utilization like on a specific instance or application, or, you know, what is the memory like? What is the memory utilization like on a particular instance? That's where you're going to need that agent. Application usage and custom telemetry, right? That's where you're starting to get into. There is some application usage that you get from Microsoft monitoring agent. But there is some elements there where you're going to now need to start making code level changes. At the most code level changes would be the custom telemetry, right? That's where you want to understand in the code, when does somebody at a certain point click on X, Y, or Z, right? And you want to have metrics data around that, right? Obviously, that's going to only lend itself to code level measurement, but you have all these choices and you can bubble these all up into application insights, which is entirely hosted in the cloud. This gives you a little bit of a comparison on what are the differences between the application availability, right, using this global service monitor, between System Center 2012 R2 and Application Insights. To clarify, Global Service Monitor, or GSM, as the acronym we use for short, is a service that is hosted inside of Microsoft Azure. That then has data centers around the world that we use to collect delays and latencies and availability metrics across all these different probes around the world. And those then plug into these two products. Now, I'm not going to dive into the depths of all these bullets here, but the point being is that, you know, the capabilities of utilizing that GSM and that availability monitoring vary slightly depending upon which product that plugs into. So here's the kind of demo that I'm going to show you here in just 1 second, which is up on the right-hand side, we've got Visual Studio Online, and within Visual Studio Online, we have the Application Insights product, which is currently in preview. And what we would do is that automatically has an integration between Global Service Monitor. That's just there by default. You don't even have to do any configuration there. It's already enabled. I wanted to list it separately because I want you to know that it is a service that's out there in Microsoft Azure. So what happens next is you would go ahead and define a rule that monitors a particular website, right? In this case, a really basic availability check. And so then what would happen is we'll do a little fun drawing here, right? You would have this, after this rule is set up, you would do this check, little check there. That's going to then come back into Global Service Monitor. Global Service Monitor is going to have the data, and it's going to pass that back into, in this case, Application Insights, right? And then you can specify a certain interval where ever so often it's going to do that probe. Now, you may have, right, a few different endpoints around the world. Whoa, look at that, huh? To where the checks happen at those different locations, and again, back, get passed back up. So
you have basically drawn a Ninja Turtle.
That is a Ninja Turtle.
Oh, look at that.
Right there. Look at that. Do you like that? I mean, that's fine drawing skills right there. Yes. So with that, right, we will go to Application Insights and show you this, this Ninja skills that I have of drawing turtles all inside the cloud. Amazing. Okay, so here we are going to switch over up to our web browser. And we're going to start off with Visual Studio Online. Now, Visual Studio Online is gives you a free trial. It's free for up to 5 users. Anybody can go and create an account. One little tip for you, if you do want to use Visual Studio Online with the new Microsoft Azure portal, you should sign up for this free trial through the Microsoft Azure portal. So if you want that integration. Otherwise, if you create a trial independently, it won't show up on the portal. So little tip for you watching today. There you go. But anyway, you'll notice here on this side, you see that there is Try Application Insights just right here, right? Try Application Insights. So all we really need to do is just click on that. And when we click on that, the first thing you're going to do is say, hey, add an application. Now, I've already added an application in this case, but I'm going to simulate something very similar for adding an app in your environment. Now, I'll click on Add App on the right-hand side over here. And then this asks you through a series of questions of what kind of data you would actually like to collect. Now, the first one says, would you like to collect data from a server component? Now, this would be like, you know, it's asking you this because it wants to know, do you need to install that agent and you want to get that depth performance monitoring data? I'm going to say no. And then what type of app do you have? This is also important to point out the fact that we do some other monitoring across more than just websites. In this case, Windows Phone 8 app or Windows Store app to gather additional data. I'm going to choose website. Then it says, okay, now we know enough to give you step-by-step instructions on how to plug that into the App Insights system. Now up top it says confirm your app type. It says try Application Insights Studio for Visual Studio. You definitely do not need to do that. This is really the step one is targeted at your developers. You know, if they want to get that deeper code level monitoring that we mentioned in the earlier slide up above. So I'm going to just skip that. And then I'm going to say Fabricam Fiber 02 website. I'm going to click create. It's going to create a new app for me to monitor. I'm then going to create a single URL test. And this will be the same experience that you would have if when you very, very first create App Insights. It's actually only really going to give you this, hey, create a single URL test. In this case, I'll just choose FF demo website 02. FF demo website 2 dot Azure websites.net. I'll click create. And that goes and creates a single URL test. Now, if you go to step 4, right, now this is getting into more depth utilization where you want usage of your app and things like that for users, right? You actually don't have to do this. Then it says, oh, rebuild your web app and deploy it. Well, no. I don't want to do that yet. obviously, if you were to include these code updates, you would need to do that. But in my case, what I'll do is I'll just go back to, I'll click on the top. I'm just going to go back to the availability section. So I'm going to click on availability now because it actually has already done those additions. And what you'll notice in this drop-down list is I have Fabricam Fiber 02 website. And the first thing that's going to do is it's going to give you this my first test, right? And what it does for this first test, I'm going to go ahead and edit that test, the availability test, is it shows you, right, the website that we just said we were going to monitor, which is the FF demo website 02. And then you'll notice something really cool here, right, that there's quite a few locations around the world that you have the ability to monitor from. We've got Japan, Singapore, Hong Kong, right? This is where the integration behind the scenes is that global service monitor. You probably, right, you don't know that's global service monitor unless I tell you, but that's basically what it is, right? It's taking those endpoints around the world to do the monitoring. In this case, I have the option of 5 or 10 minutes. And then within this, I have the ability to say, what's the criteria I want for success? Is there a certain content pattern match? Do I want just a HTTP status code? And then you could do specific alerts at the bottom for, right, if X number of locations fail in the past number of minutes, please send me an email address to be notified of that. Now, to spare you details here for waiting, now this about 5 to 15 minutes, depending on the scenario, we would start to have data here. Now, I've naturally went ahead and created a separate application so you can kind of get a feel of what data that looks like after the fact. So in this case here, I'll go over to the Fabricam Fiber 01 website, right? And this one you can see has a bit of additional information. And when I click on the global availability list, you can see there's quite a few locations that I have in this list. Okay, so within here, you'll notice that this gives you the milliseconds delays, and then it tells you, I'll zoom in here a little more, it tells you, right, like what are errors and what is the time of day for this? Okay, so, we have a whole bunch of red X's here. What happened? I wonder what happened. I mean, maybe that's when the private cloud behind us had a big thud down below us.
Could just be.
Maybe that's the private cloud infrastructure going down. I mean, if only we had a public cloud infrastructure to really make sure that there's high availability, right? I mean, I don't know.
So I'm busy on the chat window. I'm very busy speaking to people. I can't get involved in this conversation.
Yeah.
Broken data center behind me.
Okay, so let's zoom in. Let's really take a look. So in this case, we're just going to do a little zoom in, and all I did was right-click here and kind of do a drag. So you notice down below, I've got a specific time zone. Well, it turns out that, you know, it wasn't Morgan's fault. It wasn't anything like that. It really was me hitting stop on the Azure website. And thankfully, it's back online now because all I had to do was hit start and the website came back up, right? it would be nice if all of our problems were that simple, right? But sometimes, right, you need to actually dig into some of these points. So here we can really dig in and it tells us what actually failed. What was the error message code that we got? We could also download a Visual Studio web test result and pass those off if we wanted to get additional information to pass back to our developers to give you that idea of availability. Now, again, keep in mind here, we've done all of this and we haven't made any code modifications to your app at all. We also are doing this using an entirely free service, and really within minutes, you could set this up, get this going for your existing, you know, web applications that you have out there today. So it's a pretty powerful deal. You know, you also have that ability to create dashboards, right? So up here, right, I had that stop in the website. I can create customized dashboards here to see what what does that availability and response times look like. This is kind of almost like you can think of your operations dashboard inside of your organization, where you know, customize it to whatever apps that you want, have it up there so that you know when something's wrong and you have kind of that visibility of what you need to go do there. One other thing as far as web tests go that I want to highlight, you do have the ability here to add multiple, a multi-step web test. Now, here, right, you're going to have to do a new monitor, and you're also going to have to specify a web test file. I'm not going to input a web test file right now, but basically this is a really simple thing for your developers to go and do in the Visual Studio client. You would just go create new, browse to the website. They would specify a number of tests, tests meaning like just going to the website and clicking around on certain things. That creates a file that you could get from, let's say, your developer, or if you want to venture yourself to create those, you could do that. You'd put that in here, and now after you click OK, there's a lot more than a single URL in that list, right? There's a series of URLs and more specific steps to make sure that website is actually working, right? If you want to get more than a basic custom status code or those options we see in a single test, that web multi-step web test would give you a lot of powerful control to know, is it really working, right? This could be something like, I want to click to make sure people can you know, have a cart and check out or something like that, right? You know, you want to make sure that orders or registrations for the site are actually working, right? You can get really customized there, and this is where working with development even earlier on could really help ensure that before, for instance, you want to move to staging or move to production, that you do these basic web tests and availability tests for the build that they're saying is good, that actually and make sure your infrastructure is in good shape before you go ahead and push it out to production, right? So with that, I'm going to kind of snap back to the slides here and just kind of give you a quick summary of what we've seen, right? So what we've seen, right, is how Application Insights connects up to Global Service Monitor to do that monitoring of your application from various locations around the world, and it gives you that capability to monitor that entirely from a cloud without any infrastructure. We also have, like we mentioned, hybrid monitoring. So I kind of, you know, when Morgan was up there talking about System Center Operations Manager, I mean, I touched on it briefly, the fact that you can monitor Azure. This is the more detailed click-down slide on what that looks like with Operations Manager. Here, right, you would have the Microsoft Management Pack for Microsoft Azure, right? And that what that's going to then go do is actually pull and say, discover all the assets inside that subscription that exist. Right, so that's kind of that discover phase, right? And like we mentioned, Operations Manager is the main tool to do that. You know, for VMs, right? You know, the real deal there is if you're going to really run VMs, Operations Manager would be best to just run the agent there. And in which case, you might have a VPN tunnel up to, let's say, your Azure cloud, and then have that agent communicate over that tunnel. Now, there's obviously some guidelines to where, depending on how many agents you know you have and whatnot, you'd have to factor in bandwidth and other things for your VPN tunnel. You may want to have a separate instance of SCOM up in the cloud, depending on if you have a huge deployment. But this just gives you kind of an idea where you know that hybrid integration could play a role. Okay, so now we're going to switch over to scaling.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a good view of monitoring. So the monitoring, we've looked at it from a perspective of what is the state? How is it? Fast, slow, up, down, et cetera. But now how do we handle certain instances that, maybe instance is not the right word, how do we handle certain occurrences when something goes wrong? Either there's a massive load, we're running a promotion, there's an event happening, or we just have an increased usage on a certain location for our application. So if we have a look at the scale side from on-premises perspective, if we jump back to the deck and have a quick look there, really the key components are within Virtual Machine Manager, I can start to allow for scaling out for my service templates. I can either manually or automatically allow for that process to work. That is going to come down to, again, a discussion with the developers to say, right, we can technically use the infrastructure to allow you to scale instances out. You can decide how many numbers, because based on numbers, you're going to consume X amount of resources. X amount of resources is going to equal so much money. So much money, business, are you happy to actually start using that and expanding those instances based on that cost? You possibly could be expanding the on-premises to cater for a fault. Or if it is a promotion, it is an event, et cetera, that's running, it's a standard way of doing that. But what happens when an exception happens or a performance hit happens? Along the way, you want to start automating those pieces. Now, there is some hindrance in certain corners for automated remediation of instance scale out. But when you look at the effect of not scaling out, so loss of business, loss of income, possibly loss of reputation with regards to the services you're offering out to the public, all of a sudden auto-remediation becomes really important. With the integration between Operations Manager and Virtual Machine Manager, we can start to build on the monitoring that we've spoken about for the last half an hour or so and allow Virtual Machine Manager to take care and scale out for us as we see fit. Whether we put more instances out or we change the actual technical configuration of those instances to give us more performance benefits with regards to the scaling. The last piece then really is out of the box, yes, integration with Ops Manager and with Virtual Machine Manager. But if we cannot get exactly what we need outside of that, we can jump across and then use System Center Orchestrator, which is the last one in that slide deck from a scaling perspective. Then we can start to move back and say, right, whoops, one too many. Nice. Then we can start to look at Orchestrator being customized a bit more to handle the scaling and work with obviously bringing that down or possibly moving it up again or deprovisioning altogether from an end-to-end state. So that's the on-premises side. That's looking at the system center components, allowing you to handle, actually build out these instances and get and handle those issues as they are occurred.
Cool. All right, moving on to the cloud side of the house, right? And I think this is really where you start to see some of the major advantages of the cloud come into play. I mean, with Microsoft Azure, right, it's very intuitive inside the console. You can set policies based on CPU or queue to, say, scale up or down. You also have the ability to schedule things, right? And you don't have to set up any infrastructure. Microsoft Azure is going to take care of that for you. Now, that being said, you know, you do have to have certain tiers, right? We've announced this concept of tiers for compute where it's basic or standard. So basic tiers are not going to include autoscale, but it's a significantly lower cost. But once you have that standard tier of instance, you know, you get included as part of that autoscale capability. And right there from within the management console, you can set policies up and get that done. So another concept and a really a great way to achieve scale is something called Microsoft Azure Traffic Manager, right? So you're really going to direct the user to the application that's closest to the region to them. You're also going to do things like failover or do round robin for the policies that you have. In this case, you've got a client that's out there that's on the internet. You've got perhaps the same application deployed in different places around the world, right? In this case, we got the Foo. We got the Foo app, and the Foo app is in U.S., Europe, and Asia. And what we can do
in the house as well, by the looks of it, that Foo.
That's right. Nice. That's right. Now the Foos are going to go to the main website, right? The people out there are going to go to the foo.cloudapp.net. They're going to be abstracted from the fact that they're going to Foo-US, Foo-Europe, right? And when they click on that, it's going to hit the traffic manager because that foo.cloudapp.net, it's the URL that you've assigned via traffic manager or abstracted from them. The traffic manager will have a URL underneath that hood. You set policies there, meaning, hey, do I want this to be a failover policy? Do I want it to be performance? Or do I want it to be based on round robin to pass it to all these sites? And then I'm going to do some form of monitoring, right? Like, you know, that client comes up there. I'm going to do monitoring from that client to check and say, what has the quickest performance? To which site is it? In this case, let's say we use performance-based. Which has the slowest latency? They send the response back to that client to say, you know what? I want you to actually go to the Asia Foo because that one is the one that's the most performant, right? And then that client will actually go to the Asia Foo site, which is around the world, and they don't even realize that it's any different than just the foo.cloudapp.net that they're trying to go to. Obviously, this could be whatever, you know, main domain name that you want, as long as you register that URL. Okay, the next concept we want to talk about is the service gateway. The best way I like to think about this, and where we see a lot of people using this, is in A/B testing, right? So, for instance, if you want to have and test out an idea, and this is really where you're starting to probably get more into that experimentation phase of the three-way principles, right? I want to know how this performs, right? A particular ad or a different update to the site. What you can do here is you deploy the service gateway, which actually is a gallery-based image inside of the Microsoft Azure portal. You can then once you deploy that, you can then have clients go to the URL that then hits the gateway. That gateway then will allow you to specify a very granular set of rules that you can direct traffic to. So you could base this on, let's say, a user ID. So for instance, I only want users that have credentials X, Y, or Z. It could be a test account. It could be, you know, a developer. It could be, heck, you know, some of your actual users, and you know that these guys have opted into the beta tests, right? And you light that up on that portal and say, all my beta users are now going to, because they go through this gateway, they're now going to have this experience where they're through the request routing rules, they're going to go to this different portion of the site, right? So really here, you're getting a lot more granular control, more than what Traffic Manager will provide you, to direct traffic to customize versions of the site. Not only whole sites, but actually specific paths of the site if you wanted. So for instance, if I only want users that are opting into the beta to go to the /release path, just direct all those users to the release path. So this offers a lot of power for people that are out there, and it's based upon you know, some of our engineers who have done this work at scale for like Microsoft Azure Active Directory and Bing. So you're getting those IIS ARR application request routing rules, it was a function under IIS, and those capabilities kind of out of the box in a template format that you could implement inside your environment. Now, I mentioned earlier, right, this is a huge one where if you really want this at some phase down the road, you're really going to have integration with your developers, because right? They're going to be the ones that need to know, well, can I go to / path of my website, right? They're the ones that are going to know, well, who do we need to light up for this particular section of the site, right? You know, you're not going to really necessarily know that unless you work with them early on. And if you wait until the very end and they say, oh, we want this, well, your app may not be coded in such a way that you can really logically direct them to that particular path, right? So this is how it might play out in with all of those things together. In this case, right, we've got auto-scale set up on the Microsoft Azure website. This could as easily be a virtual machine or a cloud service, right? I also want to have a quick plug to state the fact that, you know, today we've been showing Microsoft stuff, but Microsoft Azure does fully support Linux, right? We support all flavors, like all different kinds of flavors of Linux, CentOS, Ubuntu. We have a full gallery VM image. So, you know, if you want to have your app on top of full LAMP stack, for instance, we support running that inside of Microsoft Azure. All right, I digress, and I'll move back here. So we've got the auto scale policy, right? Based on one of those metrics, right, we'll scale up to an additional instance, right? The auto scale policy says, oh, I know that there's a particular load. I'm going to scale to 2 instances. And then with websites in particular, you actually already have a load balancer built in. You even don't even have to worry about that. But just so you know, if somebody were to go to that site again, they would just hit the main URL of that website, totally abstracted to them, you know, and the load balance actually is something you don't even have to configure with websites. You would need to make sure you configure that with VMs, though. But they will then go to any one of those instances, right? The load gets balanced between those automagically. After that, you know, though, you may want to have, let's say, for availability or performance reasons, you want to have a global website, right, where different regions of the world, they don't have long latencies to access your site. So you go ahead and deploy that same site, let's say, in Southeast Asia. Well, in front of that, what you might do is put the Microsoft Traffic Manager in front. And then based on, right, let's say, in this case, a performance rule, you may direct that user to either the West US or the Southeast Asia site, depending on where they're at in the world, and Traffic Manager would handle that for you automatically. And then the third concept, right, with the gateway we talked about, if you wanted to put this one on top as well, and again, you could use any one of these independently, you could actually specify, right, a user based on a criteria of users, traffic percent, or a particular path, where you want to direct people to, right? For maybe only part of the path, you want to see people here, you want to save a certain percentage of traffic to some other part of the site, right? So it gives you a lot of power here with Microsoft Azure. With hybrid scale scenarios, right, we're talking here, you've got the System Center Virtual Machine Manager, Operations Manager, and Orchestrator all have major plugins to allow you to do that scale to Microsoft Azure.
Yeah, that's perfect. So, I mean, that kind of handles monitor, handles scale. And now we want to kind of move into the last piece, which is security, and have a quick brief view, understand what are those components. Now, a lot of these pieces are not new to operations, not new to infrastructure people. They understand the concepts. They've been working with auditing, with logging, with security for many years. So if we want to have a jump back to that slide deck again and give a brief overview of platform security, identity and access, and have a view of exactly what are the key components that play inside of that. And to close off this piece around the operations, auditing and logging, how do we tie that all the way back in to ensure the full life cycle is there from a progression perspective, so we know who is actually doing what, as well as from a regression perspective, if anything goes wrong, how do we roll back, how do we update, how do we make changes? So if we look at platform security, that is referring to the actual core, the platform that we would be deploying our application to, whether that be on a private cloud, whether it be in the public cloud, the platform layer be secured from an interrogation perspective, from antivirus perspective, key pieces that are ensuring that we don't have problems when we deploy the application out onto those certain locations and then experience a problem, which either will affect the rollout in the project or affect down the line when something goes wrong from an SLA perspective. On the identity and access perspective, how do we ensure that the right people are accessing the right content and location? And these were a couple of the questions that we had in the previous release section, where the questions were, how do I define that? How do I limit that? Because currently, the wrong people have the rights to deploy and push an application through. In this case, we want to start leveraging identity and access to make sure that, firstly, you are who you are, but secondly, you're in the right container for the right permissions to perform the right functions. If we don't have interaction between developers and IT Pro all the way from planning all the way through to develop, release, and operate. We're not going to be able to fine-tune those to make sure that the right people are doing the right pieces of work. So if we look at the on-premise section now, let me just jump back to the deck quickly. If we focus on the platform side, the general product security configuration, we start to look at operations manager and virtual machine manager. How do we configure the relevant requirements within inside of those to ensure that whoever's using those services has the right permissions? How do we leverage things like role-based access control to ensure that developers are accessing the developer artifacts, the people that are responsible for the security group to push an application from one phase to another is the right person who can approve a workflow like that? And then tying it all the way back into Team Foundation Server and release management. So yes, looking at the platform, looking at the products that reside on that platform, securing them, ensuring they're correct, and then start to trace and see exactly what has gone on. Because if we start to experience issues, can we roll back? Can we fall back? Well, we need to trace and see exactly what happened. So if we have not set those components up, we're not going to be able to fulfill that from an on-premises security perspective. And if we jump back to the slides, just to close off this last piece here, we need to ensure that once we have all this in place, we're able to auto-remediate and close and clean up as quickly as possible certain components and certain issues from an on-premises perspective.
All right, we'll transition now into the platform security for cloud-based products. For Microsoft Azure platform security, you know, we have a long track record of running data centers, and those data centers run, you know, not only Microsoft Azure, but they run Bing, they run Hotmail, they run MSN, right? They run all of our services, right? Office 365. And as a company, we're making a huge bet on everything inside of our company basically needs to run on type of Microsoft Azure. If it isn't already, then it will, you know, it will be down the road, right? So, you know, obviously that's one testament to our security, but naturally we also have a large team of folks that are focused on making sure that the Azure platform is secure. And instead of really spending, we could spend a long time talking about all different kinds of compliance and certifications things, but really the best thing to do is to go to the Azure Trust Center, the Microsoft Azure Trust Center, and really there we're going to have all the different compliance regulations, audit rules, and there's a bunch of FAQs to make sure that the platform itself will meet those security requirements that you're looking for. And this is something that is always continuing to evolve on our platform, but it's something for you to be aware of. Now, one comment or question that we had today that I don't really have a slide on, but I want to make sure I address is Visual Studio Online, right? How do I ensure that appropriate permissions are there for people with source code and people with, you know, that are using the service? There definitely is the ability to do those custom configurations. You know, it's really outside of the scope of and the time that we have today. But when I recommend to you, you know, go ahead and create a Visual Studio Online account. And then, you know, within there, there's a little cog or a settings wheel. There's actually some predefined security groups and permissions. And based on each of those different groups, they're going to have different permissions. And you can assign users from your Active Directory to those groups and those permission sets inside of your environment. So kind of talking on Azure Platform Security and then really just verbally talking to you about Visual Studio Online security. So I mentioned AD, right? Microsoft Azure AD. That is really the hub of the identity source for Microsoft. And this ties into your subscriptions and a lot of the other things that you do. You know, like I mentioned before, right? You know, all these different products, Office 365, Windows Intune, they do run in our cloud, in our data centers. And for those products, for the most part, right, you're going to actually need to have a authentication source of Microsoft Azure Active Directory. Like you actually, if you're using Office 365 with an E-plan, then you absolutely have Microsoft Azure Active Directory already. So the thing though is Microsoft Azure Active Directory is not unique to just our own applications. As you see on the right-hand side here, right, there is, Microsoft cloud-based apps that you can authenticate as well. We also have consumer identity providers, PCs and devices, and then this here is, I'll just put AAD, right? This is your AAD source that's up there. And from within this list, right, you're probably going to want to have some way to synchronize your identities between these two, right? Because it is technically a separate database. And when we had this set up, right, we wanted to make sure you know, us, our many years of experience doing Windows Server Active Directory, we had to create something new because, you know, we were doing an entirely cloud-based authentication, right, with Office 365 when it used to be called BPOS. And so we took all the learnings that we had from AD, we put that into a cloud-based identity store, and that's really what we have today, which is now called Microsoft Azure AD, right? So this is going to really enable you to have access to subscriptions, and you could have a single identity store that's synchronized across your on-premises and then have access to not only Microsoft Azure, but also Windows Intune, Office 365, Dynamics CRM inside your environment. So that's kind of, I mean, there's, I have full-blown long presentations on Azure Active Directory, but this is super high level. I definitely recommend you to check out some of those other presentations on more depths there, because there's a lot to it. But then moving on to Azure auditing and logging, there are quite a few options here for you to kind of pull some deeper level info of what's going on. For instance, Azure Diagnostics, I'd say, is the one of the main ones. Now, sometimes this is referred to as Windows Azure Diagnostics or WAD or WAD. Some people say, give me the WAD logs, right? It's a little weird because right, we're now Microsoft Azure, not Windows Azure, but you still might see it referenced as WAD as instead of MAD, but you know, yeah. But nonetheless, right, you can get a lot of stuff. So for instance, if you're running a cloud service or an Azure website and you want to get the IIS logs, right, because really under our cloud services, we're running on top of, abstracted from you, we're running, you know, Windows Server on top of that with IIS, right? Now you can run PHP, you can run, you know, Ruby.NET, you can run Java, right? And a bunch of different programming languages on top of IIS, but you don't really realize that. But if you do want that lower level logging, right, as an IT or an ops guy to, for whatever reason, security, compliance, or just troubleshooting, right, you have the ability to enable that logging inside the management console. You can set up minimal or verbose logging to give you those logs and that data that you may need from whatever happened on that server. Now, developers have also a number of other tools that I would say they would more likely use. So like a profiler, right, where you're doing stuff, and there's a good build session on this where, you know, if you're really doing some serious troubleshooting, the developers could take their Visual Studio console and literally debug a cloud service that's running in the cloud from their client machine, right? So there's a lot of options there, but you as an IT guy, right, from a security compliance and logging and troubleshooting, there's a number of things here so that, you know, you're not totally abstracted from the infrastructure that's running there, right? You may not have access to your physical metal, but you still have a lot of logs and stuff that's there that give you some additional visibility into what's going on under that stack on the Microsoft Azure Cloud. What are some of the hybrid security scenarios? Right, and I'll let you, you know, if you want to talk to this one
I think it gives a good summary when we look at general security. So generally, how do I secure the platform? How do I look after the platform from a normal Active Directory perspective? And then build on top of that and apply that to my relevant application layer, whether it be System Center, whether it be Visual Studio. And with inside a System Center, Ops Manager, Virtual Machine Manager, Orchestrator, Service Manager, etc. And then within Visual Studio, Team Foundation Server, Release Management. And start to leverage the base platform security, leverage the security groups, apply role-based access control, and give that self-service dynamic environment, but keeping the control back at the end of the day. And then moving across to what you highlighted now around Microsoft Azure, starting to leverage the ability to have hybrid security scenarios that you can leverage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So kind of to summarize, right, some of the different tasks that ops might have. Now, some of these obviously are going to be ones that you're used to, monitoring availability and performance. But obviously, you know, I would imagine that not all of you right out there have been aware of things like APM and even realizing that, hey, I need a Visual Studio Online account and App Insights to start doing cloud-based monitoring, right? And that's an IT type of thing. Also, you know, monitoring changes is generally a common task, but hopefully we've given you some ideas of thinking about how to, you know, scaling and, you know, some ideas where you can really pass those learnings back, right? Where you may have not realized, right, for instance, that SCOM integrates in with TFS and you can assign a bug there. So there's some just general tasks for you in the operate phase. So I think now what we're going to do is there any questions there in the queue or not really?
Nothing's come through.
Okay. So I think we're going to actually close out on the we're going to close out now on the operate section, and then we're immediately just right after this going to come back and close out And you definitely want to stay tuned for the closing, because there's more than just 5 minutes. We have some stuff that will really help you wrap things up. So stay tuned.